Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett. You're tuned into CorbettReport.com. It is currently the 10th of September 2012 here in Japan and the 9th of September 2012 back stateside, where I am joined on the line by Jack Blood, the host and webmaster of DeadlineLive.info. And I'm sure he needs no introduction to my audience and probably will not from this point out, as we are going to be hopefully talking every month around this time right here on CorbettReport.com, so I hope you'll all be staying tuned in for that. But Jack, it's great to have you on the program again. Thank you so much for your time.
It's an honor to be with you, James Corbett, on this auspicious day here, just 2 days before the 11th anniversary of 9/11. But I do have a complaint. I paid for a big intro here, so
Well, I don't know. I couldn't get the song and dance team out in time, so we'll see what we can do for next month. Maybe you can
That's
have some theme music.
Love James Corbett. He just cuts right to the chase.
You know me, no frills. All right. Well, you cut right to the chase too. You hit the nail on the head. We are here, just for me here, 1 day before 9/11. You 2 days before 9/11. Obviously, the 11th anniversary, always an auspicious date, always a time of great retrospect and introspection, thinking about what happened on that terrible day, which we have been lied to consistently for the past 11 years about. So first off, right off the bat, I'd like to ask you if there's anything, any events or any news or information regarding this 11th anniversary that you have on your radar there at Deadline Live.
I really don't. So either no one's got me in the loop here, James, or I just moved to Atlanta, so I'm not quite familiar with the landscape. If I was in Austin, I'm sure we would be doing something, but I have been traveling a lot, so people have to tell me. In fact, you can call into my show all this week and tell me how you're going to commemorate. I'm not sure if this is a big one, like the 10th anniversary or the 5th anniversary, but in my mind, it's almost bigger. The 11th anniversary, and you know with 9/11, there's all these 11s that are floating around. Kind of like markers or business cards to lead you back to the culprits of who might have done 9/11. And of course, 11 years before 9/11 to the day, George Bush gave his New World Order speech. So I'm not sure that the 11th anniversary isn't more important than all of them.
Well, and to a certain extent, I mean, it's just another arbitrary date anyway, but the 10th was just such a big psychological marker that you know, the nice round number 10. So everyone got excited about it. But I think you're right. I don't think it's just that you're out of the loop. I think that there is a lot less interest and excitement around this anniversary and a lot less going on generally. I have heard about some festivals and film festivals and things that are being screened around the U.S. I've heard about some events that are happening. Of course, there's some Ground Zero vigils and street actions that are taking place there in New York. But not anything near what we saw last year, and perhaps that's to be expected. But I think that's really the crux of this issue, of this whole 11th anniversary, because at some point we have to start wondering where this entire movement is going and how it could possibly maintain its momentum now that we're into another puppet presidency after the puppet presidency that was in charge on that day, and at least the specter that we could be facing yet another puppet president, another changing of the puppet guard. So as people are so focused on the political sideshow three-ring circus in Washington, unfortunately, they tend to think that anything that happened in a previous administration is now distant history and not really worth thinking about. So I don't know, how do we combat that? Or is it something that can be combated?
That's a really good point. Let's leave it behind us. Obama had said so much. Some people actually thought he might poke into 9/11 and start doing some investigating and getting some information out, but he was a brilliant failure for that and just about everything else. But it hasn't stopped the RNC, the DNC, the coronation ceremonies we saw last week and the week before from tapping into and using 9/11 for their own advantage.
It's still a great act of necrophilia that they bring out around this time every year, where they get to metaphorically parade on the rubble like W did back in the day. So unfortunately, you're exactly right. It's just part of that political momentum that they use and just that touchstone that they can keep going back to draw people in for voting. But of course,
saying there's a sexual side of all of this? They're getting excited sexually over 9/11, because that's what I was thinking.
Well, I'm sure there's that too, but I think they also, I mean, in a way, there's so much that has been birthed from 9/11 that it must have been some sort of act of
you said necrophilia, not me.
It's true. It was a vivid metaphor, and hopefully it is firmly placed in people's minds, because I think they do get some sort of power out of this, and they do get to birth the different parts of their agenda from what happened that day. So
well, and if you're Obama and you went out and you killed a Osama bin Laden, I mean, you're really going to tell, when did he kill him? On 9/11, on the anniversary. It's also Patriots Day here, by the way, which I'm not sure was a big coincidence, but yeah, they're going to really ring the bell. They're going to, no pun intended, well, pun intended, they're going to go for it, and there's going to be wreaths and ceremonies and already on all the TV channels, the History channels, the A&E, the National Geographic channels, and all the rest, the news channels. We've been seeing remember 9/11, remember, remember, remember. So remember, remember the 11th of September, we are going to, and I really hope people haven't given up on this, though it has been more than 10 years, James. It's still, you know, what is it, 17 years after Oklahoma City, the 93 World Trade Center bombing is almost going to have its 20th anniversary coming up here, which I think could be some of the best evidence for 9/11 being an inside job, because that was admitted. The 93 World Trade Center bombing was admittedly an inside job. And then you can accept the FBI's excuse of incompetence, that they gave these guys the bombs and lost control of the operation, all you want. But I think it makes a pretty good precursor case for what happened on 9/11, as did Operation Northwoods and the Gulf of Tonkin and a long list of false flags.
Exactly right. And for people out there who don't know about that, you're, of course, referring to Emad Salem, who was an FBI informant who was involved in the WTC 93 plot and got kicked out of the plot several months before it happened. And they went ahead with it through Ramzi Youssef. So yes, the FBI was intimately involved and somehow it just got out of their control. So funny how that happens. Exactly right. And I think that is obviously something that people will be looking back to next year. And I hadn't even thought of that. So I hope that that will generate some interest and attention. But it's so sad that we have to wait for these big milestone anniversary dates for people to be reminded of things like this.
Yeah, and watching Bill Clinton wag his finger at us during this last convention for the Democrats, where he came on and was, again, the superstar sucking up all the oxygen in the room, you know, that everything was wonderful during his term. And then you do the diagnostic research and you find out things weren't so wonderful. A lot of people blame, it was actually George W. Bush that did Ruby Ridge, but then in came Clinton the next year and we had the 93 World Trade Center bombing. Not long after that, we had Waco, and then we had Oklahoma City and Kosovo, and just a long chain of events that certainly set the stage for 9/11, including Project for New American Century, which was culled together and drafted under his watch. And this was exactly what we found out that Rumsfeld said through FOIA documents as he's on the Pentagon. Like, this is all going on that very second, you know, and he's talking to Steve Cambone, his right-hand guy, who's supposed to deliver the message to General Myers. And the message was, as we found out later, this is what Rumsfeld said right while all of this was happening: sweep it all up, go massive, blame this on Saddam Hussein, whether it's real or not. And we know that he said that now.
Exactly right. And yet, even though that is part of the public record and is not, no one can actually deny it, it still, again, has receded into the distance because Iraq is over. The Iraq war is done. So what's the point in talking about it anymore?
Is it? I know I heard that on TV.
Yeah, exactly.
Really seen much on it, but that war is over. Okay, you just say the war is over and it's over. I guess it is that easy.
Well, it appears to be, as long as people believe that. And unfortunately, it looks like the vast majority of the public do. But I wonder about a movement like 9/11 Truth, as we pass over the 10th, the 11th, and going into the 12th, 15th, 20th anniversaries. At what point things start to become something like the JFK? I guess the example that we have to look at in the 20th century of something that now pretty much everyone, 90+% of the public believe that Oswald did not act alone and know that there was some sort of conspiracy. It's been admitted by the House Select Committee on Assassinations. It's been openly talked about and is pretty much part of the public record. And yeah, yet it has resulted in precisely zero on the political front, except for some token gestures here and there. At what point does 9/11 Truth start to resemble that? Or is there a way to divert it so that it does have some sort of political relevance?
Well, that's a good question. It depends on, you know, what you want. Do you want some kind of a court judgment? There was a civil court judgment that proved that there was a conspiracy involved in Martin Luther King's death, for example. These have not done anything to set the historical record book straight. So is that the main thing, or is it the court of public opinion that matters? Because if you mention JFK, you know, 90% of the people don't believe the official story of what happened to John F. Kennedy on November 22nd, 1963. There was a recent poll put out by reinvestigate911.org showing only 7% of respondents believe they've been told the whole story of the 9/11 attacks. And I think that the court of public opinion has almost put this behind them in a way. But they just, in fact, you know, this is the thing I learned, James, going out on the streets, and we spoke all over the country and talked about 9/11 and met new people. And you know, just I guess we were spreading the gospel of 9/11 truth and just talked to new people like we were door-to-door salesmen almost, or Mormons. And what we found out is that most people were like, oh, yeah, of course that was, you know, a false flag. And they just moved on in their lives. And what they hadn't realized is how important it was, because it hinges upon our rights being taken away. It hinges upon, you know, the money that we're spending and the lives that we're losing in all of these wars for racket, these wars of corporate interest all over the world. And all of this has still been tied back to 9/11 as an excuse. You'll never hear a politician not want to milk this and say everything changed on 9/11 and that's why we've got to do all of this to you. So, yeah, a lot of people, the court of public opinion believes that it was a false flag. I think in JFK on a majority level. But how important is it? And what can be done about it? And I think, you know, in some ways, the COINTELPRO that worked inside the 9/11 truth movement did its job and kind of took the fangs out of it. And we're kind of where we are today. And not that we wouldn't have predicted that. So here we are, and a lot of people just don't believe it. Now what? And because of the related circumstances of what we're seeing now is the fallout from 9/11. More people than I've ever seen before either don't believe the official story and believe that, you know, we need to do something to protect our rights and understand the gravitas of the situation and care about it than don't care. And I think that is important.
Well, you're so right, because when I think about it on my own day-to-day level here in Japan, talking to all sorts of American expats and tourists and people coming through here, I have really yet to get into any sort of heated argument with anyone about 9/11 being some form of inside job, or at least a cover-up from start to finish. I mean, pretty much everyone seems to agree with that. But the only real heated arguments I've ever gotten into here are with people who are saying, well, so what? What's the point? Or what? So what's your theory? And that's where things start to get into the big arguments. So I think you're right. I think there is a, I don't know if we can say a large majority, but it certainly seems that way from the people I've sampled. A lot of people, at any rate, who truly do question 9/11, but the question is, what from that?
And they don't question it as much as maybe you do, or your listeners, or your audience might, but they do to some degree, and that's a pretty good start.
It is. And in fact, to me, this is almost the point. Of course, the number one overriding point of 9/11 truth is to secure justice and to bring the perpetrators to justice. And that has to be the focus. That has to be the ultimate point of 9/11 truth. But if there is to be any sort of secondary point to this, or something that we can take some sort of silver lining out of this gray cloud, it has to be something along the lines of the delegitimization of government. Because the only way that these false flag attacks can work is if people believe them in the wake of these big, massive events, and to believe that what they're saying is true. And if we have a large majority of the public that just doesn't believe what they're saying, even if it doesn't have that political ramification, at least at that immediate level, and the very least in the wake of the next big false flag event, there will be people who will not necessarily go along with the agenda. And I think we have to build on that as a potential way of getting something positive out of this.
That is perfect. Exactly the point here. I mean, I don't know. Are we going to get justice? You know, I've been accused of being cold-hearted when talking about 9/11 because I don't care enough about the victims. And after years and years and years of coverage, we've made a few jokes, such as the 19 guys with box cutters, you know, getting airplanes to just go under their command perfectly. Though a few years later, we had drones that could do that all by themselves. So that fills in a few more of those blanks. So, but the important thing is that we understand that this is a method that can be used, false flag terrorism. It can be traced back to Operation Gladio. I'm sure you can go back to Rome or Babylon and find examples of, you know, the Reichstag in Germany of framing people in order to push forward a political agenda, which really is the definition of terrorism on its own. So the most important thing is that we can recognize the hallmarks, the facets of a false flag event without claiming everything on earth as a false flag, and then identify that and not fall for it so we don't give up our rights and money and everything else as we've been just kicked in the butt, you know, 11,000 times since 9/11 under this premise that 19 guys with box cutters all by themselves made NORAD stand down, flew into the Pentagon without any pictures being taken of it. I mean, just some of this stuff is so completely far out. The Building 7 falling without being hit by a plane, and the first building ever, skyscraper ever, to fall from office fires. And I'm actually interviewing Richard Gage tomorrow for our Monday coverage. We're going to be covering it all week on my radio show, James. And this is just black and white stuff. It's just black and white stuff. So the most important thing is we know if they do it again, and I'll tell you what, Tuesday is a pretty tempting, is it Tuesday? Is it Wednesday?
Tuesday.
It's Tuesday, yeah. So it's a pretty tempting event with the 11s all lining up, and maybe something could happen at that point. We know Obama's in trouble here politically, and that could be just the thing to kind of, you know, wipe the slate clean. So we have to be able, as you said, to identify what is real and what isn't real, and then not give up all of our rights in the case, which they'll ask us to do again if this happens again.
Well, I think you're right, and you raise a good point about people going overboard and trying to identify absolutely everything as a false flag, and people trying to read the tea leaves and all of that to discern that it's definitely going to happen at the Olympics or whatever. Unfortunately, people can get on that bandwagon. But I think we also have to point out the incredible successes that we have already had in derailing some of the agenda. And you look to something like in 2007 when Cheney was floating ideas about dressing U.S. sailors up as a Iranian guard out in the Gulf there, and basically dressing them up and trying to do false flag attacks. That was outed and exposed by people like Seymour Hersh. Back in 2009, you had the Christmas underwear bomber who was exposed by Kurt Haskell, who's a 9/11 truther and someone who's spoken up about these issues. So I think we are out there in greater numbers than people might give credit for. And I think that is going to have a definite effect on shaping whether or not they can get away with this again.
Yeah, they're not falling for it, and it's going to be much harder to do, and that's why we've seen that the bulk of the terror events that have happened in this country and even around the world have been FBI infiltrated this group and gave them the bomb and the money. It's the 93 World Trade Center bombing all over again, and they just cut it off and get the credit. This is why I said there wouldn't be an attack at the Olympics when I was on Clyde Lewis's show, Ground Zero. He was very concerned about, and we were all concerned because certainly the window was open. It was there. I mean, it was a possible thing, and even the Rockefeller Institute a few years ago had warned there would be an attack at the 2012 Olympics in London. But the reason I didn't think there would be is because it just would look bad. And that's kind of where we're at now. We've done such a good job spreading information and not disinformation sometimes, maybe, but it's you know, people are more awake. They're more aware of their surroundings, and there's a much better communication cycle than there used to be. And it's much harder to get away with without you looking like the idiot, your government or your security people or your police that let it happen.
It's so true, but of course, they always have that ace card up their sleeve, because in the wake of the next huge, psychologically massive attack, and of course we've seen that with the pattern from WTC to OKC to 9/11, it's getting bigger and bigger, and of course in the wake of some unthinkably huge false flag event, some sort of, you know, nuclear detonation or whatever they might have up their sleeve, it won't be a time for there won't be a lot of time for people to react in one way or the other before the hammer starts to drop.
Huge point, and that's right. We were all pretty politically astute. In fact, I had been doing my show, my old show, Deadline Live, just for a few months before 9/11. I had been to New York the weekend before it all happened. I lived in Providence, Rhode Island, which is, believe it or not, only 2.5 hours away from New York, and I was completely ignorant. I did not see any of it coming. I just didn't. And you know, we were caught off guard, and they had their way with us. And what happened? They signed the Patriot Act without reading it. You know, we saw a lot of things happen in this country with a knee-jerk reaction, this kind of flag-waving patriotism that drove the whole agenda. It just all fit perfectly in place. I just don't see it happening, though, this time. If something like this were to happen again, I think more people would be skeptical than not. More people would be cynical than not. More people would think that there could be a political angle to it than not. But back in 2001, 11 years ago, almost today, we just were really blissfully unaware. And it had been, we remember the economic times, it had been 10 years of this perfect, you know, everybody's getting rich and everybody's comfortable and all this new technology is being developed. It was the dot-com era and we were complete. And if you remember politically, there was the Gary Condit, scandal, Chandra Levy, Gary Condit scandal that was sucking up a lot of the oxygen. We had just gone through the whole Clinton impeachment thing and there was a new, you know, era coming. It was the millennium, of course, and there was the whole fear that something would happen on the millennium. And so we were really worn out at the time, but I just don't think we're going to get caught off guard as we did. But it is something to think about, because as soon as something bad happens, everybody kind of falls into line. And that's where we got to come in and say, no, let's just wait a second.
Well, I guess that's where the rubber meets the road in terms of whether or not this has really accomplished anything in that delegitimization that we're talking about. But you do raise another good point in that in the 90s, there was the big boom that happened under Clinton and, of course, fell apart with the bursting of the dot-com bubble, which, as we now know, was really the beginning of this ongoing economic collapse. And we had Greenspan bubbles, Greenspan dropping the interest rates to basically nothing and getting the housing bubble going. And we know where all that led. So there is, unfortunately, I think, a tie between these periods of economic downturn and then the possibility, at the very least, for a false flag as a way of distracting people.
For these distractions, yeah, there was the Gary Condit. And let's all, you know, talk about this honestly. Gary Condit would not have signed the Patriot Act. There's the people that were not on board with this mass evisceration of our liberties were eliminated, like Paul Wellstone. And, the list is kind of thick there. It just all just happened right before it.
And so some of the others who were potentially going to vote against it got anthrax in the mail, so.
And then, and we can get to that if you like. But I'm trying to remember what it was like just before 9/11. And there was a big scandal with Bush and the Energy Commission, Cheney's Energy Commission. Enron started to implode right around that time. And there were hostages in China. China had found some of our spy guys and they crashed and they were holding them hostage. And there was this huge back and forth between the Bush administration and China. You know, we were really, really preoccupied leading up to it. And now, I mean, we're in an election year here. There's not a lot of that. So maybe it's not. It's a good sign for Tuesday. There won't be some attack or something, but we just never know. And look, these are the hallmarks, and I think you should put these in your files, folks. We have prior knowledge. We know that the administration had prior knowledge. To what degree? We're pretty certain they had an exact marker to know what was going to happen, the day it was going to happen. And coincidentally enough, as you know, James, they were running multiple drills that day, war games, doing the exact same thing that the hijackers were doing. When we got the NORAD tapes later that were released first in Vanity Fair, we found out that they were confused if it was the war game or if it was a real thing, which was the perfect cover. Prior knowledge, and part of that was the stand down. You'll see that in every false flag. The cover up, which is the most damning part of 9/11, the cover up and the investigation and who benefits from this. So you got motive, opportunity, and all the components that any good detective would make a suspect out of the U.S. government and its elements within the U.S. government and global intelligence as responsible for 9/11.
Well, so many good points, and of course, we can always, unfortunately, they always have this up their sleeve, and we never exactly know when they're going to bring it out, but I think you're right, we shouldn't necessarily expect it's going to happen every single month or year or whatever. I mean, this could be the type of generational event that they use to clear the decks every now and then when they really need to reshuffle the deck, but of course, we are moving into an era where with declining U.S. economic activity and the rise of China and Russia, and of course, there's all the brouhaha in the Middle East, so there's always the possibility of trying to demonize someone else. There's so many different facets to this, but anything else you'd like to wrap up with on 9/11 and sort of where we are as a movement and where we're going?
Well, as a movement, we are the first movement like us. So we're the first of our kind, and we've learned a lot, I hope, in the last 11 years. You know, I was on the air James, on a 50,000-watt station in Providence, Rhode Island, the day of 9/11, and I've grown a lot. I've learned a lot since then. So that was in the modern era, the computer era. This is the first thing of its kind, and we have reacted accordingly. So the number one lesson is don't trust your government, because they've already told you there's going to be an internet 9/11. They have an internet Patriot Act already written, and the guys will be pressured in Congress and the upper and lower house to sign it, and worldwide that if there's an economic crisis that we should just give in and do whatever we're told to do. And we have to question these events, these facts, the way the mainstream media reports things, until we have a full spectrum idea, understanding of what we've just been through. So don't start paying until you know what you're paying for.
All right. Excellent points as always, Jack. And I know you're under the weather, so we won't keep you too long today. So I do appreciate you coming on. But just before you go, anything that you're covering on Deadline Live or anything that's coming up this week that you'd like to tell people about?
We have a lot of the greatest investigators coming up and commentators, and we'll have them maybe every 15 minutes throughout the entire week. And I'm at deadlinelive.info, No Agenda Radio. And you can just go put Jack Blood out in there in the search machines and you'll find me, but exclusive coverage all this week and podcasts from that. And James, maybe you'll pop in for a few minutes next week. I know it's off your scheduled time, but we'd love to have you for a quick segment or something just to reflect with us on what we've learned. Great questions in 11 years.
Well, whenever the one and only, the great Jack Blood comes calling, I'm going to be there. So whenever you need me. Absolutely. I hope people will be tuned in this week. It's going to be just a very important week from you and from me, and a lot of coverage on this front. Lots of 9/11 related stuff happening, lots of 9/11 news. So I hope people will stay tuned in for that. And Jack Blood, deadlinelive.info, thank you so much again for your time.
Stay bold, James. Thanks for having me.